Hello, everybody. Today we're going to be talking about a mystery behind the deaths of one of the most famous artists in human history, Vincent van Gogh. Vincent van Gogh is an artist who truly needs no introduction. His use of curves and vibrant colors paved the way for abstract art as it is today. And having made over 2,000 works of art in his life, he's remembered as a cornerstone in art history. However, what is just as remembered about Van Gogh, if not more so, is the tragedy of the artist himself. Van Gogh lived a very troubled life, constantly battling ridicule from others as well as his own mental illness. And most believe this troubled life to be the cause of his death in July of 1890. However, in recent years, doctors, researchers, and historians have put together pieces of evidence that have arisen out of time to say maybe the historical record is false, and that perhaps one of the most tragic deaths in all of art was actually a selfless sacrifice. So today we're going to look at the story of Vincent van Gogh's death. We're going to draw from the accounts of Van Gogh himself and those around him whenever he died, and then we're going to pull conflicting accounts and modern findings that lead me, as well as several other researchers, to believe that Van Gogh was killed by someone else's hand. So if that sounds interesting to you, stick around as we talk about the true tragedy of Vincent van Gogh. Of course, that's if you believe the evidence I have to say. If not, this is just another crazy random rant that I have, but that's all pretty, you know, par for the course at this point. But before I waste your time with something that's probably not important, let's talk about something that is important, like saving money. And you can start saving money for free thanks to today's sponsor, Honey. Honey is the number one shopping tool in America that lets you save money whenever you buy something online. You can get Honey in two easy clicks, and from there, whenever you're at checkout, Honey will begin to scour the web to find you discount codes to save you cash. And thanks to Honey's new mobile extension, you can even start saving money while you're shopping on the go. Honey can save you money on things that you're already buying. For example, while building a PC recently, I was about to order several of the items on a friend's laptop, but decided to use mine instead so that I could use Honey. And from there, I saved a lot of money on stuff I was already paying for. And Honey can work on electronics, clothing, furniture, food, or anything else you buy online. Because thanks to Honey, saving money is as easy as lifting a finger. And thanks to Honey, you can get in on these discounts for free by going to the link in the description at joinhoney.com/Wendigoon. And from there, whenever you're at checkout, let Honey do its thing and see if it can find the best deals for you. Again, that's joinhoney.com/Wendigoon. Link in the description. Get in while you can. Thank you all so much for watching the ad. Thank you so much to Honey for sponsoring the video. It really does mean the most. Hope you all check them out. Link is in the description, and we are back to the video. We are going to go ahead and get into it, but as always, thank you for watching. Now, as I said at the beginning, Van Gogh needs no introduction. The short version of what's relevant for this video is that Van Gogh was a very tragic artist who was never able to experience the success that his name would eventually acquire. While he did make over 2,000 works of art in his life, the majority of them he would trade for a bottle of wine or just give away to people. As a matter of fact, several of the paintings that he would make and then send to his mother were thrown away by her. He was the youngest of six siblings and constantly disappointed his parents, picking up new jobs and moving from town to town frequently, meaning he was often ostracized by his family and the communities that he lived in. One of the only consistently positive relationships that he had in his life was with his older brother, Theo. Vincent and Theo were very close, and they wrote to each other frequently. As a matter of fact, for most of Vincent's life, whenever he was painting full-time, Theo financed his living expenses. And the majority of the details we know about Vincent's personal life come from the letters between him and Theo. Through these writings, we can see that Vincent was very troubled. He talked about the misery that he had in life and how Theo was the only thing keeping him going. Opportunities and relationships kept failing for Vincent, and he seemed to dive into this feeling of hopelessness. There's even a case to be made from several of his writings and paintings that he also suffered from some form of vertigo and epilepsy. And given his frequent stays in and out of asylums, it seems that Vincent rarely knew peace. This seemed to culminate in 1888 when Van Gogh famously cut off his ear to give it to a woman he was interested in. Which, as you could imagine, this stunt landed him in an asylum. Which, fun fact, there is historical records to suggest that that didn't actually happen, and instead a friend of his who was practicing with the sword accidentally cut off his ear, and Vincent made up the story to cover for him. And while I can't validate that, that sentiment is certainly foreshadowing for later. While in this asylum stay in 1888, Vincent would paint over 150 paintings, along with some of his most famous, like Irises and Starry Night. When Vincent left the asylum, his brother Theo began showing several of these paintings at art shows in Paris. And for the first time in his life, Vincent was getting good reviews and people wanting to purchase his work. So around this time of late 1889 and early 1890, Vincent moved to a city near Paris in northern France. I should also mention here that while I'm calling him Van Gogh, I know the correct pronunciation for it is Van Gogh or Van Gogh or something along those lines. But I am a stupid American and will continue to mispronounce things with full misconfidence. I say that now as I'm about to horribly butcher the following French names. The town Vincent moved to was known as Avre-sur-Oise in northern France, and while there, he stayed in the Ravel Inn. I'm so sorry. And again, at this point in his life, things seemed to be going great for Vincent. Throughout June and July, he was painting at least one painting a day. And of course, that didn't fix the illness he was dealing with, but he seemed to be in better spirits than he had previously, which made the events of July the 27th all the more unexpected. Now, as I do with most of these conspiracy-esque videos, I will give the official account of what happened before I get into my nitpicks and issues with it. The Ravel Inn, where Vincent was living at the time, was a family-owned inn. And the story of Vincent's death that is most commonly remembered and recorded throughout history comes from the Ravo's 13-year-old daughter, Adeline. So according to Adeline, these are the events that took place on July the 27th of 1890. It was typical for Vincent to come down and join the family for breakfast before he would leave with his easel and painting equipment to go paint some nature or town setting for the day, to which he would then return at sunset. And July the 27th began like any other. Vincent ate with the family, then gathered his painting equipment, and left the inn. However, despite his typical routine of returning just before sunset, Vincent was out well after dark. The family became worried about him until around 9 p.m. Vincent stumbled back into the inn. Suspiciously, Vincent didn't return with any of the equipment that he left with, and had his coat wrapped around him while holding his stomach. Adeline's family asked if everything was okay, to which Vincent responded, "No, but I have," before trailing off. He then stumbled up to his room and the family could hear him moaning for the next hour. Eventually, Adeline's father, the owner of the inn, decides to go upstairs and check on Vincent. When he comes to Vincent's side, Vincent removes his hand, showing that there is a gunshot wound just below the rib cage. When the father asks what happened, Vincent says, "I have wounded myself." The father sends for a physician, and eventually Dr. Paul Gachet, a personal friend of Van Gogh's, comes to visit. Gachet takes notes of the wound that we'll talk about later and dresses it the best he can, but overall considers it hopeless. According to Gachet, the bullet had traveled through his torso and wound up next to his spine without making an exit. Gachet said that it was a lost cause and trying to dig it out would just speed up his death. So he bandaged it and tried to make Vincent as comfortable as he could. Vincent lived through the night, and then the next night, a couple of gendarmes, which are effectively police officers at the time, questioned Van Gogh to try to figure out, you know, why he got shot. Again, at this point, Van Gogh had already told the innkeeper and those around that he had done it to himself. So whenever the gendarmes ask, "Did you try to hurt yourself?" he says, "I think so," before quickly saying, "Don't accuse anyone else." Which is an odd way to answer that question. That morning, whenever the telegram office opened, the innkeeper sent a telegram to Vincent's brother, Theo. Theo arrived at once and spent the day by his brother's side. During that day, it seems that Vincent had peaceful conversations with his brother. Among his last words, according to Theo, was, "I wish I could pass away like this." And while surrounded by his brother and the Ravel family, Vincent passed away in the early hours of July the 29th at around 1:30 a.m. At his funeral on July the 30th, several of his paintings were set across the room, and several artists from Paris came to pay their respects. According to accounts that Adeline would later give, during his final hours, Van Gogh said that he had left to go to the wheat fields outside of the town in order to paint, and that while he was there in the wheat field, he injured himself before passing out, waking up several hours later after dark, making his way down the mile-long trek back to the inn before dying over a day later. So it seems to most that the tragedy and sorrow that Vincent saw throughout his life led to his eventual death. Or did it? See, everything I just said comes from the testament of Van Gogh as he lay dying, as well as a 13-year-old girl who would recount the story decades later. That is, ignoring the accounts of several locals and witnesses at the time, including Vincent's own brother, as well as the physical evidence of what happened that July evening. So let's get into it. And as I lay out the evidence, I want to emphasize that I don't think any one piece of this is declarative that it was a murder. But wait till you hear all the individual pieces of circumstantial evidence for why I think it was, you know, evidence. For one, let's start with the actual moment of the gunshot itself. There's never a full-blown medical autopsy conducted on Van Gogh, you know, being in the French countryside in 1890, those weren't really commonplace. However, the physician took very detailed notes. According to his report, and it's corroborated with the witnesses who were there, the gunshot had entered, this is going to be awkward to stand for camera, the gunshot had entered just below the ribcage on Vincent's left side, and the bullet curved across his body, winding up next to his spine on the right side. Again, never making an exit from his torso. Which I don't think I have to tell you, if you are attempting a fatal wound, that's a really weird way to go about it. Like, yeah, it was the 1890s, but they had an understanding of where organs are. So to instead go completely under the rib cage, missing all bones and vital organs, just seems odd. Furthermore, it's almost certain that Van Gogh was right-handed due to several of the self-portraits that he made of himself. And while obviously it's not impossible to use your non-dominant hand, it's just another weird note. As a matter of fact, it's believed by many that Van Gogh died due to immediate infection he incurred because of the wound rather than blood loss, which explains taking over a day to actually die. On top of that, Van Gogh's description of the shot itself doesn't make any sense. Dr. Irv Arnberg, the author of Killing Vincent, has been a longtime proponent for the idea that Vincent didn't do it. Part of his evidence for this is the nature of the injury itself. Arnberg proposes that if Vincent was to do it, he would most likely use a Lafachot pinfire revolver. Revolvers were very rare in France around this time, so if there was one to be in the town, it would most likely be a Lafachot. There was also a very weathered one found in a field outside of the town that some think might have been the weapon that Vincent used. But there's a lot of guns found in Western Europe countrysides that doesn't really prove anything. But nevertheless, the Lafachot is the most likely candidate. That revolver, as well as pretty much every other revolver at the time, used a black powder cartridge. Modern gunpowder, or smokeless powder, was very rare around this time, and nearly every firearm in France would have been using black powder. Black powder, as anyone who's worked with it can tell you, is much messier than modern gunpowder. It leaves behind a ton of residue that can lead to burns and even ignite after it's come out of the barrel. People who are shot at point-blank range by black powder firearms have these very charred bullet wounds that are covered with these deep powder burns. To demonstrate this, Dr. Arnberg took one of these revolvers and shot various pieces of ballistic gel that were covered in clothing. As you can see, the black powder is so volatile that it sets the cotton shirt on fire whenever he fires into it, as well as leaving behind severe powder burns. As mentioned earlier, the attending physician for Vincent took very detailed notes. In the notes, the doctor said that the wound was a pea-hole-sized wound with concentric rings of purple and brown emanating out from the wound. So the doctor took notes enough to mention the size of the bullet wound and the bruising rings around the wound itself, but had no mention of powder burns, which there definitely would be. Furthermore, as I mentioned earlier, the bullet never exited his body, which could happen up close, but more than likely if you were holding a barrel up to you, it would go all the way through. These two things in combination lead Dr. Arnberg, as well as many others, to believe that he was shot from a distance. That would explain the bullet not going all the way through and the lack of powder burns. Furthermore, the idea that Vincent would fire once and then go to sleep for a while and then wake up and then walk over a mile through the fields back to town is hard to swallow, at least.
It would have been a long hike over rough terrain for a badly wounded man.
How did he climb through these vast wheat fields and down the escarpment into the town?
Also, like I mentioned earlier, revolvers were very rare at the time, with only the higher members of society having them. And no one reported one being missing or admitted to giving one to Vincent. Furthermore, after Vincent was shot, several locals and police went to the location where it supposedly happened. And despite the entire town investigating, they could never find the gun or any of Vincent's painting equipment. On top of that, Vincent's brother Theo also thought it didn't make sense. He was astounded by this because, according to him and everything Vincent had told them, Vincent was strongly against self-harm. Yes, he was very sad and yes, he was depressed, and I understand that mental illness can push you to things that you wouldn't do otherwise. But Vincent would commonly scoff at the concept, calling it sinful and a moral wrong. In his younger years, Vincent had studied to be a Methodist pastor, and throughout all of his writings seemed to continue his belief in God and Christianity. And it seemed uncharacteristic to Theo that, especially since things had been going better over the past year, that Vincent would resort to that now when he hadn't before. Furthermore, Vincent never wrote any kind of a note. Even more so, on his desk, whenever he lay dying, there were several unfinished letters that he was writing to personal friends and acquaintances. Some historians have said that a note was found in Vince's coat pocket, but that note was a draft of a letter that he had written earlier in the week to Theo. So it certainly wasn't any kind of final goodbye, and was instead just a normal letter that Vincent normally wrote. And for a guy who wrote everything and talked to people constantly, it seems weird that he wouldn't write down anything, especially to his brother. On top of that, several historians who propose the historically accepted account of his death point to a fight that Theo and Vincent had a couple weeks earlier as the reason for it. This fight, according to Theo, was over the fact that Theo wanted to start a new business, and perhaps Vincent felt that he was a burden to his brother. However, according to Theo, it was more so just Vincent worried about his brother's future endeavors, and they didn't end on terrible terms, so again, not really an excuse for what happened. Especially if, you know, Vincent was continuing to write friendly letters to him, the fallout couldn't have been that bad. So if it doesn't make any sense for Vincent to resort to that, if the logistics of the shot itself and the fact that no evidence was ever found don't make any sense, then who killed him? Well, for our proposed answer for that, look to a book titled Van Gogh, The Life. The authors Nefean Smith also didn't believe Vincent to be responsible, so instead they began to put together historical evidence and propose a new theory. That theory follows an individual named René Secretan. As I mentioned earlier, Van Gogh was seen as an outsider and constantly mocked by the community around him. A large part of that mocking was at the hand of 16-year-old René and his friends. Van Gogh was seen as a weird guy, so teenagers being teenagers decided to torment him. They would do things like pour salt in his coffee, place snakes inside of his art equipment, and put chili pepper on the end of his paintbrush so whenever he went to lick it, he would get chili pepper in his mouth. That last one's actually kind of clever. I support it. Obviously not to, you know, a struggling, mentally ill artist who is dealing with a lot of other issues in life, but as like a joke on your friend who paints sometimes, 10 out of 10. Years later, René was interviewed regarding Van Gogh, which again gives more credibility to this theory, and René said, "Our favorite game was making him angry, which was easy." Now, René had an older brother by the name of Gaston, and from all accounts, Gaston and Vincent were close friends. Gaston had questions about artistry and what it was like to be a painter, and Vincent would enjoy the company and the two would often share meals together. While in the background, Gaston's younger brother René and René's friends would torment Vincent. According to several accounts, including René's own, when René was again around 16 years old, he went to Paris and watched a show of Buffalo Bill. Being inspired by this cowboy aesthetic, René bought himself a cowboy hat and cowboy duds.
Where the authors found this untitled sketch by Vincent. They believe it actually shows René Secretan decked out as Buffalo Bill.
Van Gogh, either unable to pronounce Buffalo Bill or mocking René, began to refer to him as Buffalo Pill, which apparently angered René and is incredibly hilarious. Because think about it, René and these kids have tormented Van Gogh for a year at this point, and Van Gogh just casually says Buffalo Pill, and it just sets the kids off. Among the cowboy attributes that Buffalo Pill had bought was an expensive .380 caliber revolver. René and Gaston's family, the Secretans, had a lot of money and had a large property outside of the village where Van Gogh would frequently paint. According to several witnesses that day, who saw Van Gogh as he was leaving town, he was not walking towards the wheat fields. He was instead walking the opposite direction towards the Secretan property, specifically along an area where René and his friends would constantly go fishing. And on July the 27th, a local said that he heard a gunshot not in the wheat fields, but just outside of the village on the opposite side of town. So perhaps Van Gogh was traveling to an area that he would frequently paint at whenever he came across René and his friends, or perhaps René and his brother, or just René himself. From there, it could be imagined that perhaps René was goofing off and being a kid playing with a gun and accidentally fired. Perhaps they had a verbal argument and René was trying to scare Vincent and either fired next to him or thought the gun was unloaded. But regardless of specific circumstances, it's possible that the 16-year-old René shot Vincent. From there, Vincent stumbles back to the inn, and in an effort to not ruin the life of a young boy and his friend's younger brother, he says that he did it himself, while lying and instead saying he was heading for the wheat fields in the opposite direction. René or Gaston could have hidden or destroyed Vincent's art equipment, and that would also explain why the art equipment and the gun was never found. And furthermore, the day after Vincent was shot, René, Gaston, and their father left town. They left town for several weeks, and according to locals, whenever they returned, René, who had previously kept a gun at his hip for months, quit carrying it for some reason. René was interviewed in 1956, a year before he died, because, you know, this sounds like a lot of evidence pointing towards him. And whenever he was asked about what happened to the gun specifically, René said that Vincent had stolen it from him sometime before his death. However, if that were true, that would mean the young René had his favorite gun stolen by someone that he hated and just decided to never tell anyone. That would explain the lack of physical evidence with the location where Vincent claimed that it happened, as well as the idea that he hiked over a mile through the countryside with a bullet hole in him to get back to the inn. That would explain the odd location and physics of the gunshot that injured him. And that would even explain his confused response whenever they asked him of the situation, and he said he thinks he did it. And to top it all off, in the 1930s, whenever art historians were visiting the village in order to paint a story of Vincent's life, they began to ask the locals of his death, and everyone said, "Oh, well, Vincent. Well, he was killed by a group of kids who were messing around, but decided to keep their identity secret as to not get them in trouble." And by that point, the account had almost been solidified that Vincent was the one responsible. And as the historians would tell the locals, they'd say, "No, it's always been the story that a bunch of kids did it, and Vincent was just being a good Samaritan in his final hours." And while a lot of people continuously portray this idea of Vincent just being a tortured artist who eventually let the torturing get the best of him, I see this as such a beautiful picture. Because yes, without a doubt, Vincent struggled a lot in his life, and he faced challenges that most of us will hopefully never have to. But the idea that despite all that suffering, despite all that circumstance that he had to deal with, in his final hours, he didn't want some kids to get in trouble, kids who otherwise he had this rivalry and potential hatred of, is such a beautiful idea. 6 months after Vincent's death, his brother Theo would pass away due to health complications, and Theo's wife would eventually have Theo buried next to Vincent. And while he would never see the fruits of his labor on this side of eternity, Vincent went on to be remembered as one of the most important figures in art history. His painting, The Portrait of Dr. Paul Gachet, which if you'll remember is the doctor who attended to him at his deathbed, sold in 1990 for $83 million. Keep in mind, this is the man who had trouble trading his paintings for a bottle of wine.
Before his burial, there was a gathering at the Ravu Inn to remember Vincent. Sunflowers, of course. And on the walls, some of his Auvers paintings. The wheat fields. The town hall. A portrait of Adeline Ravu, the teenager who served dinner every night to the troubled man who lived in the tiny room upstairs. The man who once wrote, "As a painter, I will never amount to anything important. I am absolutely sure of it."
And I understand when it comes to historical accounts like this, not everything was as well recorded as we would like it to be. Not everything was, you know, cited in a way that we can definitively say what the truth is or isn't. But when taking all of the physical evidence and the accounts that I mentioned, and then comparing them against the story of a girl who was 13 years old at the time, as well as the words of Vincent as he lay dying, I like to think that this holds more weight. Because while, yes, Vincent suffered, and while his story was tragic, there was so much beauty and elegance that he managed to pull out of that tragedy. And perhaps if I'm right about these theories, then there's a beauty and elegance in his selflessness at the end. Or you think that I'm absolutely insane and this is just another one of my crackpot conspiracy theories, and at this point I can't tell the difference, so good on you. But regardless if you think I'm crazy or not, which I almost certainly am, but about this topic in particular, that's totally fine because you're still here and you're still watching, and I just want to say thank you for watching. But really, thank you all for watching. Thank you for supporting and sticking around. It means the world. So I hope you all enjoyed this video. I believe that should do it for now. But I just want to say thank you for watching. I hope that you enjoyed, and I will see you in the next one. Bye.